Among other things, we talked about Dhenukasura and how he represents a particular anatha, the mode of ignorance. Yeah, and well, the understanding given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur is that if we study these demons and how Krishna killed them, or dealt with them, depending on whether he killed them actually or didn't kill them or corrected them or whatever he did. So if we do like that, then just through studying them, that will help us to overcome the particular anatha. Not necessarily the complete solution, but it will help. And let's face it, devotees, if you haven't realized yet, please realize now, we need all the help we can get. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. It is not a small thing to get out of the material world and go back to Godhead. Okay, so that's important and that's nice, because these pastimes are very nice. They're often very colorful, vivid, dramatic, and so on. So it's nice to read about, hear about Krishna dealing with the demons. Then of course, you in the process, if you're able to understand the pastime and the particular anatha which is related, then and the anatha itself, well, that's good, because you know it helps to understand one's position and particularly what is wrong with one's position. And then you can try to address it. We did mention yesterday that Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the anathas which the demons killed by Krishna represent, they can be overcome just by your ongoing engagement in devotional service, and at least if you make progress. Whereas the anathas that the demons killed by Balaram represent, then you need to work on them more and take shelter of Balaram, take shelter of the spiritual master. But having said that, if we have any anatha, and we become aware of it, then we should not just be satisfied to think, okay, I don't need to do anything about it, like directly try and fix it, because as I progress, it will become fixed by the grace of Krishna in the process of devotional service. You know, if we get some understanding that we have some anatha, then it's good to try and correct it. Like, just an example. You may have, it is really Anyway, you may have the anatha that you tend to become a little angry, a little aggressive. I don't know if any of you have such an anatha. Probably not, but anyway, you may know someone who does. This is actually agasura. Agasura represents cruelty, violence, you know, that kind of little more dramatic type of nastiness. So you may have such an anatha, or you may know someone who has. And so now that person is in some situation, the type of situation which may provoke the anatha. For example, someone may criticize them, even blaspheme them, or maybe a devotee may even steal something from another devotee. Would you believe it happens? I'm referring here more to things like, for example, a spring roll. let's face it, it could be anything, actually, because, wow, you might be surprised what some devotees sometimes steal from other devotees. I mean, it can become pretty bizarre. But, you know, maybe it's just your spring roll. Or your samosa or kachori. And you might just be a big kachori specialist. And you get... Well, have you heard the story? I don't know if I've told the story. But Prabhupada once, the first time he took disciples to India, way back in, I think, perhaps 71 or thereabouts, one time they were invited, all of them, with Srila Prabhupada, to the temple of one of his godbrothers and for a feast. So there they were. They had a feast with Prabhupada. Prabhupada was taking prasadam with them. Prabhupada was served first, he finished first, and then the devotee distributed Prabhupada's remnants. So one devotee, and we will not mention his name, but one devotee, got a gulab jamun from Srila Prabhupada's plate, which Srila Prabhupada had taken a bite from. Wow. This is just maha, maha, mega maha prasad. And the devotee sitting there looking at it, wow, it's a wow moment. Wow, look at that. I got the mercy, Haribol. And while going through those sort of preliminary ecstatic feelings before the ecstasy of actually eating it, another devotee grabbed it and ate it. It was gone. Finished. That was it. Irretrievable. I have seen devotees, would you believe, I have seen with my own eyes, devotees put their finger, like their finger, middle finger and thumb, into another devotee's mouth. Take out something in the middle of being chewed, but he was too slow. It was already gone. Unless you put your hand down your throat, it's just too late. So he was in a state of shock. I got Prabhupada's Mahaprasad, and he stole it. Oh my God! So he went to Srila Prabhupada and he complained. And he told Prabhupada that this devotee, and he named the devotee and pointed to the devotee, I got your Maha Gulab Jamun, And this devotee, he stole it and ate it. And he was hoping or expecting that Prabhupada would say, "That is terrible. Call him here now. And I will discipline him." But Prabhupada didn't do that. Prabhupada laughed. And Prabhupada said, "Oh, he was very intelligent." And then Prabhupada said, "So anyway, you know, that's interesting, isn't it? That's just an interesting point anyway." But then Prabhupada made an interesting, related, but somewhat different point. But it's a very important point. Prabhupada said, in regard to prasadam, there are two types of devotees. One type likes to eat prasadam. The other type likes to serve prasadam. Prabhupada said, they are both good. But the one who likes to serve prasadam is better. So anyway, I was saying, we got a little off track there, but I was saying that some devotee, just as an example, may have some prasadam stolen, something that he was really looking forward to, and he may get disturbed. Or, you know, whatever it may be, something may happen which sort of presses the wrong button, and the devotee becomes disturbed and feels that, you know, I should tell this other devotee a thing or two. Or even in an extreme case, it's extreme. It may never have happened here in Newcastle, I hope not, but it has happened before. He may think that the criminal should be punished, like physically. It has happened in the past. It'll probably happen again sometime in the future. And then some other devotee may tell him, "Listen, don't hit him or don't shout at him. Just tolerate." But now the angry devotee may feel that I really want to express myself. This is what I want to do. It is what I feel like doing. And if I don't do it, it will be artificial. Sometimes we hear this sort of talk. We don't want to be artificial. Do something which may be kind of a little forced, but we want to just do what we feel like doing, which might, you know, in such a situation include punching someone in the nose or shouting at them, you know, something like this, something strong. And they may feel, well, look, you know, I don't want to be artificial. It would be artificial if I didn't punch him in the nose, because I really feel like it. If I didn't shout at him, it would be artificial. And I don't want to be artificial. So therefore, I'll shout at him. But actually, sadhana bhakti, the process of sadhana bhakti, which means the practice of devotional service, when you're learning to do something like drive a car, even operate a computer, or, you know, so many things. When you are learning, you have to practice. And when you practice, it's understood that you're not going to necessarily do it very well. In fact, you may do it badly. But you have to practice. If you don't practice, you'll never get it, like driving a car. Unless you practice and you make some mistakes and you hopefully learn from the mistakes before you make them a second time, then through that practice, well, they say practice makes perfect. So sadhana bhakti, in this regard, in regard to anarthas, Even though, as we mentioned, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that anathas will be cleansed away over in the course of time just by your ongoing participation and involvement in Krishna consciousness in the very broad sense, just doing all the normal things in Krishna consciousness. But at the same time, if you become aware that you have an anatta, that it exists, it is an existential reality, then it makes sense to try and do something about it. Because the problem is, if you don't do something about it, you know, and if it, the anatta, that bad habit, misconception, whatever it may be, this undesirable thing, if you allow it just to go on and on and on, and you don't do anything about it, on the basis of the idea that, well, you know, it'll be cleansed away in due course anyway, so I don't really need to do anything about it. But the problem is, you may commit offenses on the basis of the anatta, and then your offenses may compound themselves, and then they may compound themselves again, and before you know, you may have not just some annoying little bad habit or something like that, but you may have something which is kind of driving you out of Krishna consciousness, pushing you in the direction of the door, you know, the exit from Krishna consciousness. So anyway, my point here is that it's nice to work on ourselves. At the same time, you know, it's a subtle thing. There has to be a balance. We don't want to just get into self-consciousness, that I've got this problem and that problem and another problem and various other problems, and your consciousness becomes like an ocean of problems. We have to, you could say, periodically do a little health check. And if something really becomes prominent, then we'll have to act. But we're here for Krishna consciousness, not self-consciousness. So, like we say, it's a bit of a balance. Focusing on Krishna, but being aware of ourselves and particularly anything we need to do something about. So therefore, this whole idea, in fact, we've done a seminar on it, a one-month seminar, just on the demons and the anathas. So it's nice to learn about these things. And like Dainakasura representing the mode of ignorance, what to do about it? What could you do about that? Because after all, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, those anathas connected with those two demons killed by Balaram, you really have to work on it. So how could you work on ignorance if you felt that you were suffering from ignorance? Well, without going into detail, but just one point, one thing you can do if you're afflicted by ignorance is, would you believe, read Srila Prabhupada's books. What do you think?
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, there are other forms of ignorance, but, you know, like in just a sort of a very straightforward sense, ignorance, just being sort of dumb and stupid, we can learn things, spiritual things about Krishna consciousness, and then we won't be so dumb and stupid spiritually. We'll actually learn how to deal with life in Krishna consciousness. So then the question could be, and sometimes it is, how to get a taste for studying Prabhupada's books? Now, this is a very important question, because I don't know if you've had the experience, but let me let you in on a little secret in terms of my own experience in Krishna consciousness. When I first joined this movement in January the 7th, 1973, I went out after just a few weeks, like maybe 3 weeks or something. I went out on a book distribution party just around London, headed by a devotee named Partha Prabhu. Do you know Partha Prabhu? I don't know where he lives now, but I believe he's sort of in circulation somewhere. So, okay, there we were. We go out distributing books. But in the middle of the day, we would stop and we would read Prabhupada's books. Very good. You know, the problem was, though, in those days, we did not sleep very much. I mean, you may have noticed here, in communal type conditions, you take rest. Very good. You need the rest. Okay. So you take rest, and then someone comes in. Bang. Hey, where's this? Where's that? And, you know, it may take some time before you can really take rest. And then there has to be some early bird, early in the morning, who gets up. Bang. Well, we had, in very place, in one room, we had a room, I would say, what now, maybe one third the size of this room. We had plus or minus 20 devotees living. I'm serious. And at night, you'd come and everyone's on the floor, I mean on the actual wooden floorboards. The only thing between you and the floorboards was your sleeping bag and the paint on the floorboards. Otherwise, it was direct contact. So you had to find a slot, 2 meters maybe by 1.5 feet, and you just kind of just get in there. And you'd normally wake up at some point during the night with someone's feet in your face. Or someone's arm on your head. What a life, I tell you. So we didn't get a lot of sleep. And as a result, when we would read, when we're out there on book distribution in the middle of the day, we'd take a break and read. You know what would happen? This is my own experience. My reading of Prabhupada's books was a series of experiences of waking up. Not falling asleep. I didn't even notice that. All I noticed was I was waking up every few minutes. And I realized, oh, must have fallen asleep. So, but the thing is, you know, it's a really interesting and important thing. If you get a taste for reading Prabhupada's books, then even you may be very tired, actually, like legitimately tired. You may have only slept a couple of hours the night before or something like that. But if you really have a taste, then you will not fall asleep while reading Prabhupada's books. And if you don't have a taste, you may have had 8 hours sleep, 9 hours sleep, you know, like some sort of sleep marathon, sleep-a-thon, but you may still fall asleep if you don't have a taste. So this is the question, how to get a taste. Otherwise, you try and read the books and, let's face it, on a certain level, they can be fairly hard going, heavy going, isn't it?
Yeah.
Be honest, yeah. Because, you know, it's very philosophical. Even something like the Krishna book, which Krishna stories, but there's a lot of philosophy in there. So how to get a taste. And in our seminar, we talk about this. And the suggestion that we give, if you want to really get a taste, get some mercy from the Lord. Yeah, get some mercy from the Lord. Because Krishna says that he gives the taste. Not like you buy it or force yourself into it, but Krishna gives the taste. Yeah. So he gives the taste out of his mercy to people he's pleased with. So how to please Krishna so he'll give you the taste? The suggestion is from Chaitanya Charitamrita, serve the devotee. Serve the devotees. If we serve the devotees, Krishna becomes very pleased. In fact, in Bhaktisandarbha, Jiva Goswami says that serving the devotees is a more effective way of developing love for Krishna than trying to develop love for Krishna. That's pretty profound. Yeah. More effective way of developing love for Krishna than trying to develop love for Krishna. So yes, if we serve the devotees, what's the verse? By serving those Shushusha, that's it, thank you. Shushusha Shadanasya Vasudeva Kata. Ruchi.
I can't remember the next part.
Okay, me too. Shushushoshanadanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi Sian Mahat Sevaya Vipra Punyatiyathana Shevanat. By serving those devotees who are completely freed from all vice, great service is done. By that service, one gets a taste, ruchi, for hearing the messages of Vasudeva, of Krishna. Please try and understand this. This is like a key. It's like a secret for entering deeper into Krishna consciousness. By serving the devotees, particularly the devotees who are completely freed from all vice, and let's face it, devotees, that's not all the devotees, but particularly those devotees, great service is done, and by that service, one develops a taste, Vasudeva Kata Ruchi. One develops a taste for hearing the messages of Vasudeva. How is it that you develop the taste? Well, actually, you don't exactly develop the taste. Krishna gives you the taste. That's how it works. Krishna gives the taste. So how's that? For getting out of ignorance, study Prabhupada's books. That's pretty obvious. How to study Srila Prabhupada's books so you really get into it and it's not a battle. And it's not, you know, something which regularly puts you to sleep. Get a taste. How to get the taste, serve the devotees. Okay, those are some thoughts on that. I thought we could go on this evening and discuss another demon. Kaliya, the Kaliya Damana Leela. And I chose this because Kaliya represents envy. Envy, and particularly in the context, envy in the form of poisoning the hearts of the devotees. Not with cyanide, strychnine, something like that. But well, it's spiritual cyanide, actually. Yeah. Through poisonous talk. This is what Kaliya represents. You know, some of these demons, you can see the anatha in them. Some of them, it may not exactly be. You hear that this demon represents such and such anatha, and it's, well, okay. You know, that's what they say, so all right, we accept it. But in some cases, like Denikasura is a donkey, and donkeys, after all, are the sort of the emblem of ignorance. And snakes, obviously, they poison. So the anatha is kind of related to the demon in this case also. So you know the story, right? Let me tell you the story. It's a nice story. Krishna, well, and don't forget, we mentioned yesterday, this pastime happened on Balaram's appearance day. Yesterday was the anniversary. And Balaram was not there because he was at home having a party with his mother. With his mother. All sorts of nice things. I'm sure nice cake, probably some ice cream, and so on and so forth. Okay, so Krishna was out there with the cowherd boys and the calves. And the cows. So they went down to the Yamuna. If you're familiar with Vrindavan, you'd know the place, Kaliya Ghat. There's a fairly substantial kind of memorial type thing there. And the tree is there, the big old Kadamba trees there, still ancient Kadamba tree. You know, interesting point about that tree is that when Lord Chaitanya was there, Chaitanya Charitamrita says, he saw the original tree. And from what we're told, the tree which is there now is the same tree that Lord Chaitanya saw. So it sounds like it's actually the original tree, thousands of years old. I mean, it's a massive, gigantic tree. It looks like it's more than a few hundred years old. So there they were, down by the Yamuna. And they drank the water from the Yamuna. And you know what happened, devotees? They all dropped dead simultaneously. All of them, except Krishna. Yeah? Because the water was poisoned by Kaliya. So Krishna revived them all. You know what I just read recently? In Gopal Champu of Jiva Goswami, Jiva Goswami describes that Krishna, when he saw all the cows and all the cowherd boys dead, Krishna became very emotional, very, very affected by the situation. And Krishna started crying. And he was moving around the cowherd boys and cows, crying. And his tears were falling on them. And when his tears fell on a particular cowherd boy, the cowherd boy came back to life by the touch of Krishna's tears. And Krishna was just going around them all. It took some time. Crying. because of this whole situation, but reviving them with his tears. So then Krishna decided that, you know, this is the work of that demon Kaliya. I'm going to punish him. So Kaliya had been there since the beginning of that day of Brahma, of this day, means a long time, long time. The river at that point was so poisonous. You know, poison acts as fire. A little bit of interesting general information for you. That poison, its potency is the potency of fire. Yeah, not just of being something rotten or something like that. It acts through fire, as fire. That lake was so poisonous, it was boiling. And if ever a bird would fly over the top, it would just, the fumes were so powerful, the bird would just die and fall into the lake. So Krishna decided to punish Kaliya. So he walked out onto the branch. The branch, it seems, is still there. And devotees of ISKCON, Newcastle, and other, London, and other areas tell us, well, Krishna did two things. He did two things. Do you know what those two things are? You can tell us one.
Okay, he tightened his belt.
As wrestlers do before they fight. That's one thing. What was the second thing he did? Anyone know? Yes, well done. He made a funny sound by flapping his arm. You know what I mean? Can you demonstrate? Oh! Well done. Very nice. So he did that. And then he jumped in. He jumped in. And when he jumped in, he created a tsunami. Tidal wave. Massive, gigantic wave. Now, how could it be? Because Krishna is just a small boy at this point. I forget exactly, but he's maybe 7 years old. It's before, I think, before the Govardhan Leela. So he's maybe 6, 7 years old. It's something like that. How could it be that little Krishna jumps in and creates a tsunami? Well, devotees, the reason is this. Listen to this. Because Krishna is everything. And everything is within Krishna. And can you imagine if everything landed in the water? Everything means all the universes, all the planets, all the species of life, the material realm, the spiritual realm, everything compressed landed in some water, you better believe you would get a tsunami. So this tsunami went out across the lake, and Kaliya was there. And Kaliya is an interesting person. Kaliya, devotees, Kaliya does not have ears. Kaliya is called in this regard, Kaliya is called Chakshu Shrava. Chakshu Shrava means he hears through his eyes. Wow. Wow. Yeah, that's Kalia. He hears through his eyes. And he heard through his eyes this incredible splash when Krishna hit the water. And he's looking around thinking, who's the rascal who jumped into my lake? And suddenly the tsunami hit him in the face and almost wiped him out, as we say in surfing circles, just about obliterated him completely. So then he swam over towards where Krishna had jumped in. Krishna swam towards him, and about maybe half a kilometer out, they met. And Kalia grabbed Krishna. And Kalia appeared to hold Krishna and catch him and like imprison him. And Krishna apparently was just pinned and he just couldn't move, apparently. And this is something interesting. Listen to this, devotees. Generally, our acharyas say, and Srila Prabhupada himself says, and it's kind of pretty obvious in one sense, that Kalia, being a demon, was holding Krishna and trying to crush him and kill him, actually. You know what Sanatana goes, sometimes our acharyas, they kind of suggest. They don't always just say, this is like this. End of story, full stop. Sometimes they suggest maybe this, maybe that. You know, interesting perspectives. Sanatana Goswami gives a really interesting perspective. Listen to this. See, the thing is, in his previous life, Kalia was a devotee. He was a devotee. His name was Veda Shira. And Veda Shira had an ashram somewhere, a big ashram. And people would come and sort of drop in, you know, drop in and stay, uninvited guests. And he would just have to put them up because it was his ashram, it was a big place. But he, you know, he became frustrated with this. This is Ananatha. He became frustrated with this, that all these people, they impose on me, and can't they find their own ashram? So one day, another sage named Ashva Shira came to stay. And Veda Shira got really angry with him and said something like, what are you doing here? Can't you find your own ashram? This is no good. He started sort of hissing. And Ashva Shira said, listen, you hiss like a snake. Become a snake. Yeah, so he ended up as Kalia. Anyway, but he had been a devotee. He had been a devotee. And somewhere deep within, there was some remnants of that. Although there was this, you know, demoniac mood was really the main thing. But underneath it all, there was some trace of devotion, heavily obscured. So anyway, Sanatana Goswami suggests that maybe they were embracing as long lost friends, meeting after a long time, and they were just embracing. Just a thought, an idea. And Sanatana Goswami says, when friends meet after many years of separation, they may embrace for a long time. Now, when, who was it? Madhavendra Puri met, I think, Lord Nityananda. When they met, they embraced devotees. Do you know how long they embraced for? 3 days. 3 days they embraced for. And there are other accounts of other devotees meeting and embracing for like 3 hours, 6 hours. Depends on the depth of the relationship. I don't think any of us have embraced for 3 days, have we? How about 30 seconds? And I read, I forget exactly who it was, but it was one of the acharyas, maybe Sanatana Goswami, says that the depth of the relationship is indicated by how long the embrace is. Okay, so that's just an interesting little aside. So then, someone went running back and alerted everyone back in the village. All the adults were back in the village, and Balaram was back there having a birthday party. And someone came running in and just raised the alarm very dramatically. And everyone panicked and ran towards the Yamuna, except Balaram. Because Balaram, he's smart. I tell you what, he's super smart. He is just ultra smart, Balaram. And he knew what was going on. He knew what was going on. He knows who is Krishna. So he was trying to stop everyone by saying, no, no, it's a lie, it's not true, don't worry. But they would not stop, except his mother Rohini. She stopped. She remained back. He told her, prepare prasadam. We'll be back in a while. Don't worry. So she, because she is, you know, connected with Balaram. So he told her, she accepted it. Everybody else who's connected with Krishna, they wouldn't accept it. And they ran. And they followed Krishna's footprints. Interesting little detail. They followed Krishna's footprints down to that place on the Yamuna, quite some distance. And the question could be raised that how could they follow his footprints? Because, you know, there's thousands and hundreds of thousands of cows and calves. Many animal, like forest animals, but they followed Krishna's footprints. How were they still there? Our acharyas explain they were still visible because the animals would never step on Krishna's footprints. They would never step on them. And if a leaf ever fell on the footprint, the animals would remove the leaf. And Krishna's footprints were always accepted as being worshipable, even by the animals. So they all race down and they arrive down there. And they're all just panicking totally. But everyone except Balaram. Well, initially Balaram also panicked out of love, because he's a devotee. But then he pulled himself together and his intelligence sort of kicked in and he understood, listen, this is Krishna. This is that Krishna. the Krishna, the big one. There are many Krishnas, as you know, those of you from Indian backgrounds would know. Krishna is a popular name. There are many Krishnas. And this is why in Bhagavad Gita, Vyasadeva did not one time say Sri Krishna Uvacha. And Prabhupada talks about it because people would ask which Krishna is speaking, because there are many Krishnas. Your next door neighbor may be Krishna. Interesting. We were in Mauritius in April. Sachinandan Swami, Govinda Maharaj, Kadambakanand Maharaj, and various others, having a kirtan mela, we arrived there. And we met one of the boys who was assisting us. His name was
Krishna.
So we just arrived, we're sort of settling in. And Krishna walks up to us and says, "I'm here to help." I said, "Okay, what's your name?" "Krishna." I said, "Oh, Krishna, I've been looking for you for years." And Krishna said, "Oh, you know, Sachinandan Swami just said the same thing to me." So, in Bhagavad Gita, what does it say? Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Because when we say Bhagavan, we mean God. Yes, okay. So anyway, Balaram understood what was going on. And Balaram initially thought, he laughed. And thought, "Listen, Krishna, you want to play with a snake? Why don't you play with me in my form as Anantashesh? If you want to play with a snake, why bother playing with this mundane, petty Kaliya?" So Balaram was cool, everything was okay, no panic. But he was the only one. Everyone else was just gone completely. The animals were crying. The trees were crying. The rocks were breaking. They're all in just total distress. And Balaram saw that. And Balaram thought, okay, how to kind of, you know, pacify them, cool them down a bit, what to do. And then he thought, "I know what I'll do. I will act like everything is okay, because it is, even though they don't realize it. I will act like everything is okay, and I will smile. I'll smile at everyone." Okay. So he started looking around and smiling. And the Brijbasis, they were shocked. "What's he smiling about?" So Balaram realized, no, that's not a good strategy. And then the Brijbasis started entering the river to go and be with Krishna, to join Krishna. "If Krishna's going to die, we will die with him. We will go out and die with him." And Balaram saw this and he thought, "No, we can't have this." So he started stopping everyone. Some he stopped physically. Some he stopped by just calling out to them, "Stop!" And some he stopped just by glancing at them in a certain type of way. And this worked for a while, but after a while, as Krishna's still being held out there, after a while, again their emotions built up and they started entering the river. And now Balaram is running up and down and stopping them and shouting and trying to stop them, but he couldn't stop them. they were just entering the river, and that was going to be that. So then Balaram, the crest jewel of the wise, Balaram called out to Krishna. Let's see, what did he call out? Balaram, yes. Oh, Krishna, Krishna, these people are not your associates from Vaikuntha. They're not your monkey associates from Ayodhya. These are not the Yadavans. These are the people of Vraja. You are their only life and soul. Krishna, they're dying now. Even though they have spiritual bodies, but they're dying. Lord, I have no power to save them. They're now lifeless. Oh, merciful Krishna, only friend of the people of Vraja, please give up this pastime, or your gentle heart will become filled with grief. Because they're all going to die. So Krishna, when Krishna heard that, Krishna thought, right, that's it. Let's move on to the next phase of the pastime. So Krishna just broke out and jumped up on the heads of Kaliya and started dancing. And Krishna, you know, like we said, Krishna is everything. So when he jumped in, he made a tsunami. Can you imagine if you had everything dancing on your head? Wow. And if you know, I don't know how much you know about Indian classical dancing, but he was doing Kathak style. You know what Kathak is? Stamping, bang, 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 crash on the heads of Kaliya. Kaliya was finished, finished, finished. Kaliya was just about to die. He could not speak any longer. But then the realization came to him. This is Krishna. His dormant, covered Krishna consciousness started coming out. And he started praying. He couldn't even speak. Just praying within his mind. I'm yours. I'm yours. And he surrendered to Krishna. And Krishna didn't kill him. This is one of the few real demons who Krishna did not kill. You know, he didn't kill Indra, he didn't kill Brahma, but they're not like real demons. But Kali is a real demon. And Madhvacharya makes an interesting point. Listen to this. So there you have Kaliya, and he's just within his heart. He's too beaten to say anything out loud. He's just saying, I'm yours, I'm yours, I'm yours. Madhvacharya says, one who simply thinks with devotion that the punishment which the Lord is giving me is actually mercy towards me. So one who thinks like this with devotion indeed becomes pious. But for those who continue, even after punishment from the Lord, to envy him, their attitude is the reason for their continuing to fail to recognize him. This is a little bit of spiritual psychology for you. If you're envious of Krishna, you cannot recognize him as the Lord. It's a very important thing. And to whatever degree we may be envious of Krishna, to that degree we won't really be able to recognize him or accept him as the Lord and as our Lord. So anyway, according to Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Krishna kept Kaliya as a domestic animal to pull carts. According to the Bhagavatam, Krishna banished Kaliya. Banished Kaliya. And the story is that he sent him to Fiji. And Indrajumna Maharaj went there once to try to find him. But he did not. But he said he would go back because he got some good leads. Yeah. And our temple in Fiji is the Kaliya Krishna temple. And Prabhupada said that Kaliya probably went there. Now, so this brings us to the anatha of being envious and like poisoning the hearts of the devotees with envious talk. And it's often, or sometimes at least, a not uncommon example of such talk is amongst devotees. It's often about the temple president. Now here you don't have one, but right from time to time you have like a chairperson or something. So it may be that person. Who's the chairperson now? Ah, Brenda. Wow. Okay. So this is an example that some devotee who's influenced by Kaliya, envious, poisonous mentality, comes up to another devotee and says, "You know Vrinda, right? Yeah, I know Vrinda. She's a really nice devotee, isn't she?" "Yeah, she's a very nice devotee." "Yeah, she's very nice, but..." "But..." And then comes the poison. "She does this, she does that." Your mind is kind of opened a little because there were some nice things said and you feel a little positive. Okay, good. So your mind is kind of open. Then comes the poison. We must not do this. We really must not. There's a saying, the tongue is a very amazing weapon. All it has to do is be in range of the target, which is the ear. It doesn't even have to aim. Just be in range and it will find the target. Yeah. So Kaliya was banished to Fiji or somewhere. And the point is made, this is a very interesting point, you see. Kaliya became a devotee. Kaliya became a devotee. But because Kaliya had this poisonous tendency, this background of being poisonous, Krishna would not let him stay in Vrindavan. Krishna sent him out. Just to his own place, somewhere out of the way, where he couldn't really create further disturbance by poisoning. So the thing is this, devotees, if somehow or other we, any of us, get into such a sort of a practice, a habit, Krishna may do the same thing to us. We may realize, wow, I'm doing something wrong, I have to correct myself. That's good. But still, Krishna may think, you can't stay with the devotees. And Krishna may effectively banish you by just somehow some arrangement occurs in your life and you just end up in some obscure place just out of your control. You just end up there in Timbuktu. I think not a good place to end up these days. But you know, some obscure place, the Outer Hebrides. Well, you could always preach there, I suppose. But some really isolated place where you won't get association like that. So we have to be careful about this anatha. It's a nasty anatha. It's a very dangerous anatha. Because if, you know, if for example, like with Vrinda, if someone does that to you, says some nasty things and you listen and it goes into your heart, it poisons your heart. So later when you see Vrinda, then you think, ah, there she is. It's that bad devotee. Don't mind. Yeah, no, really. You just end up thinking that the person's not nice. Just because your mind's been poisoned. The mind is very sensitive. Therefore, Rupa Goswami says, if you ever hear blasphemy, if you hear blasphemy, you know what he says you should do? You should kill the blasphemer. Hari Bol. He says, if you can't kill the blasphemer, at least cut out his tongue. Hari Bol. If you can't cut out his tongue, kill yourself. Hari Bol. And if you can't kill yourself, just get away. Just get away. Okay, so I think we could manage that. So seriously, if you hear blasphemy, criticism, don't just hang around listening to it. Even if you don't agree, and you're thinking, no, look, this is not right, shouldn't say that. That's not bad, but better just to get away. Or try to counteract the blasphemy by saying something positive. Yeah. Because it's very powerful. Very powerful. And let me just close by saying that Raghunath Das Goswami, he talks about this, criticizing devotees. And he says, there may be a group of devotees talking about another devotee in this sort of negative way. And you may come by and hear it and tell them, look, don't say that. Don't talk like that. And the other devotees may say, no. This is Krishna Katha. This is Bhakta Katha. We're talking about a devotee. This is very spiritual. In other words, they think it's purifying. It's cleansing. Because we're talking about a devotee, but it's not. So Raghunath Das Goswami says that, yes, you may think this is cleansing, like taking a nice bath. Like taking a nice bath. But Raghunath Das Goswami says, yes, it's like taking a bath in donkey urine. Donkey urine. Anyway, I think you get the idea. It's highly undesirable. Highly undesirable and extremely contaminating. So there you go, devotees. That's our message for this evening. Don't criticize devotees. If you've got nothing good to say about a devotee, don't say anything. But if you've got nothing good to say about a devotee, find something good to say. And we should only really, you know, like focus, if a devotee has some problem, we should only really focus on it if it's a really serious problem. If it's just some eccentricity, you know, some little quirk of character, some little strange type of habit, try to ignore it, tolerate it. But if you see them smoking or something like that, okay, you can make an issue of that. And let me actually close by saying that one devotee approached Prabhupada one time and said that this devotee such and such. This devotee is too much. He's too much. He does this, he does that, and he's too much. And I just can't handle him. And Prabhupada said, no, no, you tolerate him. He's a devotee. Tolerate him. And the devotee said, but Prabhupada, he's too much. He does this, he does that, and so much nonsense, and I just can't handle him. And Prabhupada said, he's a devotee. Try to tolerate him as I tolerate you. In other words, we were talking about this a little earlier with some devotees. Don't worry, devotees. Don't worry. As you are tolerating someone, don't worry. Someone is tolerating you. It's a fact. And we all think, of course, I'm a good guy. Of course I'm good. No one's tolerating me. Everyone likes me because I'm good. But don't worry. There's at least one person tolerating you. So anyway, let's avoid criticism. Try and really glorify and appreciate the devotees. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada King.
Jai.
Srila Prabhupada King.
Jai.
Srila Prabhupada King.
Jai.
Oh, Premanande.
Hare Krishna.